sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
A big move for markets. The euro soars and China growth is accelerating. We have all this and much more on episode number 290 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Now, if you haven't noticed, this is Andrew Horowitz with a cold. This is the last week of November, and I'll tell you what happened. I'll be honest with you. The story is one that you need to pay attention to because sometimes just being nice is not going to cut it. There I was. I was actually at the hospital for my father-in-law last week, and there was a nurse, a male nurse there, that was talking with them and discussing the different things that were going on, and he started to see that I was doing some things and looking through a few things. He asked what I did, and I told him. And he was very interested and very excited about it. He started talking to me. And he asked me a lot of questions. And he started telling me about his son. Very nice. Very, very nice. But as he was talking to me and telling me all these things, he kept on rubbing his nose. And to be honest with you, it was more than, I don't need to tell you all the details. But he was kind of like, wiggling it and talking to me, then touching it and rubbing it and touching it. And now I'm thinking, oh, no, this is not good. When it comes to colds and germs and all that, I'm not a big fan. So I eyed the Purell bottle, the dispenser in the corner there, and I was all excited that I was going to get to do that. Well, he's talking to me, and now he puts out his hand. He wants to shake my hand. What do I do? I'm freaking out. What do I do? I don't want to be mean. Okay, so I shook his hand. Then he continues talking to me. I couldn't even break away to get the Purell bottle. Keeps talking to me. Anyway, this went on 3 times, and I was just getting more schivatzed each time. So I decided to go over, after he left, I went over and washed my hands really well, the Purell I put on and stuff, and I got to tell you, 2 days later, I got a cold, and it's been lingering ever since, and so I'm not feeling very well, and the moral to this story is, you don't always have to be nice. If somebody is maybe sick or whatever, you don't have to shake their hands. Do kind of like the Larry David thing, maybe use an elbow or something, because it's just not worth it. Well, thanks for listening to that. Anyway, we're going to have a holiday shortened show because of not only am I feeling well, we got the holidays. I hope you enjoyed your Thanksgiving. I wonder if you did go out and find some good bargains on Black Friday, Cyber Monday. There was that great one. I hope you got this. The Small Business Saturday by American Express, where if you use your American Express card at a particular location that's a small business, you get a for every $25 you spend, you get $25 credit back. Well, not for every, but up to $25, I should say. So you spend, $30, you get back $25. You spend $50, you get back $25. Now, I happen to have a lot of American Express cards because, the kids in my family, we have the emergency card, and I have a couple of different ones from different promotions here or there because my wife is really big on getting all the frequent flyer miles. And as a matter of fact, I think had a total of 8 cards that we went to various places and bought things with. And we got, we're going to get back $25 on each. So American Express had a nice little deal for small businesses. You couldn't use this at the big box retailers. You had to find like certain gas stations or maybe certain liquor stores or maybe clothing stores that weren't a chain, if you will. So it was all based for the small business. And they've done that, I think, for the last 2 years. And that was kind of cool. Anyway, let's talk about what's going on with the markets. I got a couple of stocks to talk to you about. I want to talk to you about last week's move. It was very interesting. We looked at the commitment of traders report. And once again, it looked like the hedge funds and some of the big boys that were short, were once again wrong-footed, and this has gone on multiple times throughout this year and last. And that's why you see these big thrusts up and down when all of a sudden markets start to move and everybody is on one side of the ship and they want to kind of, you know, get onto the other really quickly. So you get that big rotation move, and the big question is, where do we go from here? What has changed? In the news, you see that, well, they're talking about the fiscal cliff issue may be solved. We'll get to that in a second. We're seeing that, oh, there's some good thoughts that maybe Europe is getting better. Let's get to the facts about Europe. I think we need to talk about this because, first and foremost, Greece has maybe gotten a two-year reprieve, and now they're even talking about just writing off some of the debt at this point. So there's nothing good happening there. Once again, they're just pushing things down the road in Germany, and some other countries are going to have to pay the price. France was downgraded. We're seeing the manufacturing numbers and unemployment numbers, you know, still in lower lows and worse case than they were recently. But one thing that you did see was the discussion that, well, they're going to come to a budget resolution, but no, they're not. So when you look at this in totality, you wonder what in the world happened with the euro. The only thing that you could really think about here is that there was some technical breakouts of the euro, which we did see some of those. And, you know, markets are following the euro. You see a big correlation between the euro and the dollar and equity markets in the U.S. and around the world. Maybe it was spurred because you saw some better numbers in China when their manufacturing number, the flash index, came out above 50 for the first time in, I don't know, about a year, I guess it is. So that was good. That's good to see. You know, not great, but still good. It could still dip back into contraction, but that was good to see. And then at the same time, you saw some of the housing numbers here in the U.S. and some other things do a little bit better. So the risk on trade maybe was there. We saw that markets dropped pretty fast. But still, the euro, with one of its biggest moves in about 9 months, seems a little bit, well, overdone. That doesn't mean it won't come back, you know, keep going. But, you know, we almost clipped 130 on Friday. But that was in a very short trading period, and there was a little, I guess, resistance at that point with traders, you know, taking early weekends and elongated weekends. So what's going to happen from here? Because the you know, EU ministers are trying to still get together and talk about a budget, and the reason they can't is because many of the quote-unquote rich companies, at least on a relative basis, are protesting. They don't want to pay all the money for the countries that are failing. And you still see the question about Spain, and bond yields are rising once again over in Euroland. And, you know, you have this kind of big problem with England saying, hey, guys, listen, why are we chipping in for this? Why is the budget? I don't understand. Why are we getting hung in, you know, out to dry with this one? We're kind of part of the union, but not really. We don't part of the euro itself as a currency. So we do see that the euro was moving. I would just, you know, we talked about the week before that we were in an oversold. Remember I talked about the oversold KRI indicator? Clearly was a very good sign back on Thursday, Friday of the week before. But at the same time, we kind of shot up a little bit too fast here. That doesn't mean that we can't have a trend change all of a sudden from the last, 2 months of a downtrend to all of a sudden, you know, moving to the potential for an uptrend here. But I would just say that the light volume move and all, you just got to take it with a grain of salt. So what that means is that, you know, if you're going to start entering in here, wait for good confirmation for, you know, good consistent bounces off support or breakouts above resistance on an individual stock. And when it comes to markets right now, I think you're going to see the continuation of volatility with every breath that the Congress takes on the fiscal cliff, which I think bears some talking about, because we're only talking about 34 days, 35 days until this thing automatically reverts, and the fiscal cliff, which they call it, is a, you know, reversion back to much higher tax base. And the funny thing is that the press and the media and Congress and, you know, the pundits out there are all talking about, well, if there could be a, you know, a fix. And that'd be really good for the stock market. Well, I would tend to agree with that. If there was a fix, if there was something that just made it go away, well, that'd be great. Here's the problem, and this is what I think we all need to pay attention to. And if the media would get this straight, I would absolutely stand up and cheer because they talk out their butts. Here's the deal. There is no fix for the fiscal cliff issue. There is no fix. And let me tell you why. The problem is that what what was done initially was to postpone and to lower down taxes to stimulate the economy in hopes that that in itself would provide enough of a lift to then spur on growth. And when we got to the point here, we would be so much well ahead of the game that increasing it would really not kill the economy. But along the way, what happened was a little bit of a financial meltdown, a housing crash, et cetera, and a global worldwide slowdown and recession. Growth of incomes, growth of GDP has not gotten back to where it was. It hasn't surpassed. And at the same time, now we're talking about what was supposed to happen didn't. In addition to that, we raised the deficit and debt ceiling tremendously. There's not enough money coming in taxes to pay down the debt, and our debt outstanding is enormous. So now, you take the idea that this was originally crafted to be a stimulus package pretty much on its own, and then get repaid sometime in the future with obviously bad arithmetic, very poor projections. And any time, by the way, politicians come up with plans that are based on significant growth in the future as the only way to get out of, you know, the hole, very, very bad. Really piss poor planning at best. Because you just can't do that. You have to think of worst case scenarios and not best case scenarios, because that will just break the bank eventually. So now what's happening? Here we are where we have a choice. Well, their fix to the fiscal cliff is to, let's say, I guess the best fix right now you can come up with is to just cancel the idea entirely and just let everything stay the way it is. Keep the taxes for everybody across the board. You know, no change. Everything stays. The problem is that we have an enormous debt load to pay. That doesn't fix the situation. It doesn't fix the situation that the annual deficit is enormous and it's killing us, because what's happening is that between the lower level of taxes that are being taken in and the spending that we have on either transfer or entitlements or whatever it is, you know, whatever the program is, running the government, defense, whatever it is not being covered. So we have a net amount in the negative side of the equation that's draining our, if it was a company, it would be draining our profits. We would be not, you know, if we were a company, our earnings look like crap. And on top of that, we have the rest of the world still having a big problem. So that fix, it does extend, well, I guess you would say extend and pretend. It does extend the nice feeling that we have right now, floating on a much better bed of tax levels and net income to people. But behind the scenes, Washington is rotting. Our budget is just, and the core of our financials, it just rotting away. So that's not a fix. Okay, so the next thing would be to just decide to, okay, we'll roll back some of the taxes just for the wealthy, come to an agreement that that's fine, and the middle class won't pay anymore, and we'll kind of slightly change the taxes for the on the employment levels, and maybe just don't take away all the deductions and do, if you know, kind of a little bit of massaging, and let's just say 1 foot in, 1 foot out. Well, that doesn't help either, because we're just a little bit better off in terms of the paying off the debt, but at the same time we're taking away from a major component of the spending in the country, because you're taxing at a higher rate and there's less money flow around, etc. That doesn't work. So you have all the way on one side of not doing anything and just letting everything just stay the way it is and let it just go. Somewhere in the middle, okay, an agreement somewhere in the middle. So you have two different agreements. So if that's what they call a fix, I think the word agreement is better, not fix. The third thing is let them all roll back. Well, already we know that the Congressional Budget Office has estimated about a 5% knock on GDP over a two-year period. It's very significant, pushing us into a recession, no question. And, you know, the list goes on from there. And by the time you do that, you still didn't make up enough money to pay off the debt and to get to where you want it, because You have now raised taxes on a lower wage base. You're going to have a higher unemployment rate because of this, because, you know, employers won't have the money to keep people on. And then at the same time, you have less people working, and then they can't pay taxes, and it just, you know, kind of continues on this discussion. So let's face it, there is no fix. There are only agreements. So if the agreement is to just extend, yeah, that's good for the stock market because we get this great sugar high that, oh, everything's fine and nobody's going to, you know, companies will do better. So the money flows into the companies. If we go halfway, not so good. Definitely not so good. The fact is that if we go all the way and just, you know, let everything just roll back, just all the taxes are raised, everything gets, you know, to a point that it's really bad, it still doesn't fix the fundamental fiscal problems that we have in the U.S. And not only that, if this whole situation is handcuffing Congress and the president from enacting any other stimulus that may be necessary due to any particular financial shocks that may hit. Did you think of that? Have you ever thought of that? If they can't come to an agreement on just stopping the rollback, how can they come on, possibly come, not to an agreement, but how can they possibly even think about any further stimulus? The only thing they could do is, if that's why the Fed's out there, you know, barking every day about how they could do more and, you know, spend more money and just build up this imaginary, you know, vault of securities that they keep buying from the government. So I think a reality check is needed when it comes to the media, the pundits. There is no fix. And I bet, I would bet that nobody listening right now has heard of a viable solution to fix this that doesn't add pain somewhere else. Because all you hear on the news is a fix. We need a fix. We need a fix. Nobody says what it's going to be. So keep that in mind when you talk about, you know, markets, and in particular the industrials and those very sensitive areas. I mean, have you seen utilities lately? Aside from the storms and things that may have knocked them and maybe some weather issues, man, utilities, the whole sector is just getting obliterated. Why? They have dividends. And they're talking about raising the dividend tax. That's why we're seeing those special dividends pass through. Sturm Ruger passed through a beauty last week. We own that stock. We talked about the gun stocks a few times on this show. And that stock has just done incredibly well lately due to the fact that people are nervous about, you know, gun control laws, and the fact they passed through just a humongous dividend, a special dividend that will be coming, I believe, in December. All right. So China is doing a little bit better. But again, those were kind of the, you know, some preliminary numbers here. We'll have to see what's happening. Next week, we have a very big load of economic data that's coming in the U.S. And some of the important numbers that we'll probably see are the return of probably the optimism after Black Friday, Cyber Monday, and, you know, the weekend shopping with the early opening of stores on Thursday, Thanksgiving. Oftentimes what we do is we hear these really unbelievable numbers from the Retail Federation, you know, record numbers of people, this and that, and boy, what a great, and then they get revisions. Just unfortunately, the optimism is a little bit hot in the beginning, and they want that to be the case because they get everybody excited about shopping. You know, it's kind of like a, you know, it's the Pied Piper. Well, everybody's going shopping. I'm going to go shopping. So realize that the Retail Federation and some of the other players come out with a very optimistic report usually in the beginning. And then that's usually tamed a little bit towards the end. We'll see. And also, you know, I think it's also important to remember that the better the deal for the consumer, the less that is made by the company. So while they may have the foot traffic on a lot of these deals and they may really get some great opportunity to see a lot more traffic, and they have a lot more product moving, it's at a much lower margin. So, you know, I think that the optimism at this point may be able to be faded. Well, not right now, but we'll watch on the consumer stocks. We're kind of taking a look at Michael Kors, for example, KORS, as a short. We have a small position that we added for the second time. The last time we were very profitable on it, and we added that again, and we're looking to see how that plays out after the, you know, the weekend where you see that, you know, shopping was okay, but, you know, how okay was it? You know, what were they really buying? Was it high-end items or was it the low-end items? Was it, you know, where's all this coming from? Let's also talk about something really interesting, as a matter of fact, when it comes to this particular time of year. It's you know, you have these seasonality issues. Now, a lot of, it's interesting, a lot of investors, big investors, they look at the seasonality. You know, the you've heard of the Santa Claus or the Santa Claus rally. You've heard of sell in May and go away. You know, the October numbers. There's all sorts of little seasonality quips you've heard. And there's some truth to some of them. You know, there's definitely some seasonality in the beginning of the year, the end of the year. But one of the things I did a study back to the year 1980. And we looked at the day after Thanksgiving, how markets in the S&P 500, how they did. So what was the return on the day after Thanksgiving since 1980, each and every year? And then also, what was the return on the Monday following? Now, I thought it was kind of interesting that there is a very high seasonality to see a up day on the day after Thanksgiving. That's interesting. You got some other things going on there. It's a half day usually, and you know, you have lower trading volume, less people playing, so that kind of has a propensity to push things up a little bit because there's not a lot of battleground that's being fought. Okay, that's interesting. There's some optimism in the markets because, you know, it's that season. Okay, that's great. But what was really interesting was that the Monday following, this I thought was really interesting, the Monday following has a propensity to be down. And there's been some whopper downs. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of times when the markets are up big on the Friday before that you see the exact thing happen in reverse on the Monday after. So maybe it's kind of like a buy the news situation where you buy the rumor, sell the news, I should say. So we're kind of buying the rumor that Black Friday is going to be great and all these shoppers going back, and then all of a sudden you get disappointed. And maybe that's something that goes on there. Now, it's not a consistent every single time that we see this. The correlation isn't you know, perfect. But check that out. We put that up Sunday night, I believe. You'll see that on the Disciplined Investor each and every year. And then the percentage gains and the averages and the differences in color-coded fashion. So check that out over the DisciplinedInvestor.com. And by the way, I think I mentioned this. If you want to get daily updates of all the things that we write, if you go to the Disciplined Investor on the top right, just to the right-hand side of the main page, you just put your name and email in there, and every day you'll start getting the summation of all the things that we wrote the day before. So you get it that next day. And you'll get the summation of all the different things that were written, so you don't have to worry about that. And if something interests you, just click on it and kind of move over there. So that's a good way to keep up with what's going on. Let me just mention GoToMeeting real quickly, and then I got some stocks I want to talk to you about some of the economics, a few things. GoToMeeting, what can I say? I mean, GoToMeeting by Citrix is a great product where, you know, if you want to do basically meetings or any kind of keeping in touch, sharing of data, collaboration, man, these guys got it down. Because all you have to do is launch your screen and you can have this big meeting. You can have, there's actually these GoToWebinars. We can have like things like voting and polling and questions and tracking and people interacting and sharing microphone back and forth and changing the moderator, all these different really cool things. But GoToMeeting is one of these things that you need to check out because not only is it a great way to keep in touch and communicate and you have all the information that you're sharing on your screen and somebody sees instantaneously in real time, but the best part, it's free for 30 days. That's right. Go to GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code PODCAST, and you will get a free 30 days of GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting.com, great place to check out. Okay, a couple things I want to talk about. Let's see. So I talk about Hain Celestial? Let me see here. Put that up Sunday night also. Hain Celestial, they're a, we'll call them a food company. And basically, we actually came out with a short discussion about them and going short back in October. DH Unplugged, we put it up there. If you haven't listened to that, we have a little stock game. We do a little of kind of what we think is going to be good shorts and longs, and you could see the track record that we track on a Google spreadsheet that's live and updating all the time. But on Tuesday nights, and comes out most Wednesdays, DH Unplugged, myself and John C. Dvorak talk about stocks. Well, I talked about Hain Celestial, how it was a short, and we really felt very compelled that this was a good short opportunity. All right, so we actually did short that, actually at the same time, Trigger Point Research subscribers got the short alert, and then we closed it 3 days later, I think it was, for about a 9% gain. It just, you know, came down very strongly, just like we like it, in a fast zone, and that was great. Well, now we're seeing there's an article written in Barron's, and somebody's talking about a 33% potential downside. 33% downside for Hain Celestial. So what will probably happen, just to kind of give you a little bit of technique here, or a little training, usually what happens when a Barron article comes out that has a very, very strong bias on one side or the other, what you see is that the stock takes an initial, you know, drive up or drive down. And then you'll see that there's just a, you know, in the first part of the morning, a big move, and then they come back up. They kind of like rise a bit, and you get a little bit of a squeeze out because there's obviously a lot of people that don't agree with this potentially and want to buy at a bargain price. And then what happens is, you know, from there you see what happens, you know, to the stock, and then you figure out whether or not the Barron's article was right or wrong, or what, you know, one of these big newspapers, what they have to say. So again, I haven't been reading it, but I did see some of the headlines, and I thought that was interesting. So I actually put up something about where we think Hain Celestial can go. And frankly, there is some downside here, but you got to pass through a couple of different levels to get there. There's a lot of support on the chart, you know, about 10% lower or so. And if it does break through there, first you got to break through about $58 on Hain Celestial, which is symbol H-A-I-N. And if you do see that, well, there is some potential further downside. You know, and the other thing you have to realize is that markets have to be kind of cooperating too. They got to be weak. If you see a market that's flying on the upside, it doesn't matter really. You know, you're going to see some movement or stabilization in the stock. So take a look at that particular post, because there is that potential, and I do agree with the fact that there is some potential move down, especially after earnings. The stock has not really gotten any legs after they recently beat. And I think that with the higher food costs and maybe with consumers paring back on their spending in certain categories, that, you know, that and, you know, they kind of the whole food market, a few others, you know, the natural food area may be a little bit of a concern. Again, from the higher commodity and input costs that go into it. So I think that's something to take a look at and to you know, to see what's going on. There was also earnings on Salesforce last week, which I thought was really kind of interesting. It's one of those stocks that people just love. You know, you can't short it, even though its fundamentals are really not in line with what the price should be, so it seems. And, you know, even though they just met on their earnings and they beat a little bit on revenue, and their outlook was not you know, super great for a company that's supposed to be as powerful as it is. Now the stock took off about 8% after their earnings. I was kind of surprised about that. Initially it was down about 2 or 3, 4% when it came out, because you saw that there wasn't anything really great in this report. And historically we've seen the same kind of situation where you see a surprise of, let's say, on average 8% or 7% on EPS is what you've seen. Revenue surprises have not been there, and the stock does very well. If you know, in the last, since I guess back to about 8 quarters ago, back to February of 2011, you know, you've seen the stock that, you know, it's really done okay when it's seen a nice surprise. And that's why I was kind of astonished that they came in right on their earnings expectation, and at the same time they, you know, just nobody seemed to care, and they bought the stock up. We thought at least you'd have to see a 3 cent beat to see a stock rise as it did, because if you look at the historical numbers, it's just, you know, it only does do that when they see a significant beat. But again, you know, what they did announce was that there was a significant amount of larger deals that they cut, and maybe some companies that are coming in and finally changing over into a cloud-based platform, and maybe that's, you know, getting people excited that this is gaining some momentum. But I thought that was really interesting. I mean, it's a great company. I love Salesforce, you know, but I don't know. It's a little cold on their earnings numbers. Another thing that came out this weekend I thought was really interesting. If you've got in the past our quarterly reviews that we write, the economic review and commentary that we put out at Horowitz and Company, I think it was two back. As a matter of fact, just to let you know, we'll have, if you want to download the latest one, I think Wednesday or Thursday, it's going to be made available. We give it out and send it out to our clients first, and then delay it for, you know, people to read afterwards. But if you go over to the site, you'll find that. You'll be able to just click a button and download it and have it emailed to you. It's a PDF. But one of the things we talked about in there, which seemed like a really crazy idea at the time, was, you know what? This whole idea of low interest rates is silly. You need to raise interest rates in order to spur on any activity and economic activity. You need to get the fear in people that interest rates aren't going to stay down forever. One of the things that Bernanke is you know totally trying to do is fight deflation. Right? We know that. We heard him talk about that time and time and time again. All right? Right? So one of the byproducts of deflation is that people, or one of the reasons even for deflation, is that people put off buying things because they believe the prices will be lower in the future. Inflation is where there's a chase, and you're chasing product because you're worried that the price will go up. Okay? All right. Now, if we have that table set right there, and then we think about, well, Bernanke just keeps on talking about inflation not being there and the fact that he's going to keep interest rates low or ridiculously low forever, it seems. Well, what really gives the incentive for anybody to do anything? In other words, they may see the interest rates as very palatable and very appealing, but at the same time, what gives them an incentive to say, yeah, man, I'm doing it now because I'm, you know, I want to get in now. So we looked at a variety of different things and saw that we thought this was actually a keeping interest rates down low and having a open communication policy of this elongated period that you would do so, we saw as a negative to economic growth. We saw this as a way that would actually, depress the opportunity of people going out and trying to chase. Now, 3-4 months later, maybe even further than that, an article comes out. The cure for economic slump seen in raising rates. The solution to weak economic growth may be higher interest rates. This is on Bloomberg. And they said that seemingly paradoxical, the remedy can apply if the cause of the slump is a confidence shock that cheap borrowing costs are failing to reverse, two Columbia University economists said in the report published this week. Brilliant. A little late, but brilliant. In such a situation, ultra-easy monetary policy risks making fears of deflation a self-fulfilling prophecy as spenders sit tight. I mean, doesn't that make sense? This is what we've been scratching our head about when they started to talk about this extended period of low inflation, of low interest rates. They said if low interest rates can't motivate jittery consumers, then the answer may be the opposite, an increase in borrowing costs. Such a shift can boost inflationary expectations and therefore foster employment. I don't know about fostering employment, but I guess the first thing it does foster spending, which then possibly can then lead to adding employees, et cetera, et cetera, in manufacturing and et cetera. They said also here that by its effect on real wages, future inflation stimulates employment, thereby lifting the economy out of the slump, they said. The economics said sagging confidence among households and companies has played a part in the recent economic slowdown. Evidence from the U.S. as well as Japan during the last two decades seems to suggest that zero nominal interest rates are not doing much to push inflation higher. And at the moment, the Federal Reserve pledges to keep its benchmark interest rates near zero through mid-2005. I totally agree with this. I think the whole idea of keeping interest rates this low, while nice, is stupid. I'm not sure how this is really helping. You want to keep a loose policy, that's fine. But you know what? If nothing else, and by the way, if you're doing it just for the stock market, that's bad reasoning. If you're doing it for the economy, I don't think it works. I think you got to start talking about how you may come out of this. You know, the market may get hit momentarily because, you know, you got all these people that are depending on stimulus, and that's what everybody wants to see from markets, liquidity and stimulus. But you know, at the same time, maybe what this will do will spur on people to spend, maybe. Maybe that will then create a process that is like a spark that lights a fire and then changes from a government-led, monetary policy-driven market and economy to a homegrown, holistically healing economy that's doing it on their own. Because until government gets out of the way, there's not a chance in hell that the economy will heal. They're too big, they're too... They're too much of a roadblock to really satisfying high quality economic growth, because the thing is that they can push and pull, and it's kind of like the economy is a puppet, and they're the puppeteers, and it's just not gonna give you any kind of good long-term potential. So I think it's really good. I'm going to actually republish this article on the website and give you also a link sometime this week to the actual one that we wrote that maybe these researchers got the idea from. Who knows? Crazier things have happened. Crazier things are happening. So anyway, like I said, it's going to be a bit of a shortened show today because I'm not feeling very well, and I'm sure you're all very sad about that. And send your warm wishes. But, you know, with a short week and the fact that I'm not feeling so well, we are going to come to a close here, only about halfway than usual. And because we also felt that we'd give our guests a break this week, we are going to be coming back in strength next week, though. So just stay tuned. I have some cool guys. I'm going to get Jack Schwager back on. Larry Williams also, because he has a great year-end update that, or beginning of the year, yearly update that he puts out that's fascinating. I want to get, definitely by the end of the year, I want to get Frankie back on, Frank Curzio back on as well. And we're going to see if we can get a couple of the players talking about commodities, because some of these commodities and the moves that we've seen recently have been just off the charts, and maybe some ways that we can figure out a way to get somebody that has have, you know, somebody with some interest in the commodity area that can talk to us a little bit intelligently about that. In the meantime, check out DH Unplugged. This week I'll be talking with Dvorak about all sorts of good stuff. He's got some good things I know on his list that he wants to talk about. Check out Trigger Point Research. We are coming out with a commodity alerts package in the beginning of December. Just to let you know, there'll be a trial available for that. And of course, if you haven't done so already, what are you waiting for? We're making some decent money. A little bit of a rough month last month with all the movement on the downside, but you know what? That was made up well in the last several months. You got to stick it out. You got to stay in there. Not any given time is going to be good or bad. You know, kind of stick with the program. And the strategy seems to work with Trigger Point Research. And for those of you who have been since the beginning, you could probably tell others, yes, yes, there has been some significant profits. It's been nice. And otherwise, well, we'll see you real soon. I thank you for joining me, and thanks for putting up with my nasal and very difficult, probably, to understand discussion today because I'm a little bit cloudy in the head and a little hazy. But I'll see you next week. Happy Thanksgiving. See you soon. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.